Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Solomon Lee at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Taylor Pate at Taylor L. Pate on Twitter. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing awesome. I actually just came back from vacation, so I haven't had time to record a podcast in a while, and we have quite a lot to talk about as far as the Rockets are concerned. And we're going to talk about the finals for a little bit because we're also an NBA podcast, so I want to get to that too. So pretty much the first thing that happened when I got on the boat was Dwight Howard opted out of his contract, and that surprised the hell out of me because I expected him to opt out towards the end of the opt-out deadline, and I didn't expect him to opt out so quickly. But fortunately for the Rockets, that gave them a lot more flexibility as far as trades is concerned, heading into the draft to do some things and play with the cap a little bit, play with some contracts. And, you know, going into July 1st, they're much better prepared knowing what they're going to do as far as, you know, getting agreements with guys on July 1st and whatnot. So I want to talk about Dwight right now and Dwight's future going forward. So basically, I think he's done in Houston, and that's not necessarily my wish for Dwight, but that's what I expect is going to happen. My biggest thing on Dwight is I think his tenure in Houston was good, and I think it's something that should be cherished. What I'm always going to remember about Dwight is his few minutes of defense towards the last bit of Game 6 in LA, towards what could have been a closeout game for the Clippers. He defended his ass off, and he helped the Rockets a fair bit get into the Western Conference Finals, and, you know, get to push towards that Game 7 and get to the Western Conference Finals. And he doesn't get a lot of credit for that. You know, the guys that get credit for that Game 6 victory are Josh Smith and Corey Brewer, and, you know, Dwight Howard's brilliance defending the basket is often overlooked, and I just that's what I'm going to remember personally when I think of Dwight Howard's tenure in LA. I mean, in Houston. And I think that's what fans should remember too, because Dwight Howard, yeah, although it didn't end how fans would like it to be, I still think in large part it was a successful pairing, him and Harden, and I think that's what fans remember. I don't think whenever Dwight Howard signs with his new team and whenever he comes to Dwight Center, I don't think he should be booed. I think he should get an ovation, actually, and I think fans should remember his tenure in Houston fondly, and that's just my opinion. What about you, man?
Yeah, you know, Dwight has he's always been one of my favorite players. You know, probably top five favorite players, and I think that our expectations, Houston's expectations for bringing Dwight in, were, you know, compete for a championship.
Yeah,
and in 3 years, you know, he was insane against Portland. You know, we ended up losing that series on a shot heard around the world, but he was so good in that series.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next year we end up going to the Western Conference Finals, largely in part, like you said, due to his defense, you know, against the Clippers. And so when you really look at it like that, his tenure here was successful. He had a successful tenure. This year, I mean, they still managed to make the playoffs, and, you know, they really weren't competitive, but you know,
that wasn't Dwight's fault.
3 years, you know, playoffs every year and Western Conference Finals one of those years, and you lost to what turned out to be, you know, potentially one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah.
And I know that the relationship soured, and I know that that's going to affect his image towards fans. Me personally, I don't think that he should be booed or hated or anything like that. I think that he should definitely get a standing ovation. He was, I mean, he was a huge part of what made this team successful, and what, you know, may even make this team successful in the future, because they're going to see that history of the Rockets being a, you know, largely winning franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my biggest thing is, I think, as you said, I think the Rockets had too much expectations, especially their fan base, of Dwight Howard coming in. You know, he came in under that, you know, legacy of Bigs mantra, and, you know, a lot of people expected that he was going to be the heir to Hakeem Olajuwon, and I think that's unfair. I don't think that's something you should expect from anybody coming into the franchise, to take such a big mantle from a Hall of Fame talent like Hakeem. I think, you know, while Dwight is a Hall of Fame talent in his own right, I don't think you should expect that from him coming into this towards the latter years of his prime, and with the injuries that he's amounted with his back and his knee. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's fair to expect that from him. I think he played the best he could given the circumstances he was dealt. And he missed a lot of games, sure, but, you know, that's largely out of his control. Yeah. And I think fans should remember him and, you know, smile every time they remember Dwight Howard's tenure in LA and Houston, because I think it was largely successful, as you said. He played awesome in the postseason pretty much every year he was here. And I think that's what you should remember of Dwight Howard. And I know fans wanted a championship with Dwight Howard, but hey, 29 teams every year don't win the NBA championship, and I don't
exactly. Yeah. And the way that we lost, you know, in the Western Conference Finals, what can you lost to the team that went on to win it? What can you really expect? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and that I agree with you. I just think, if you expected the Rockets to beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, I mean, I would think you were largely deluded, because I think that team, the 67-win Warriors team, was just awesome, and they were on a mission, and they were completely healthy, and the Rockets weren't. And not to say that played any part into the Rockets losing. I'm just saying that certainly didn't help. And I think that, you know, Dwight Howard shouldn't carry any flack for how the last season ended. Right. I think last season was in part due to many reasons that didn't involve him. I think, yeah, Dwight didn't play up to his usual standards, especially on the defensive end, but, you know, a lot of guys didn't. You know, Trevor Ariza, a guy that we towed for his defense, he didn't play up to his best defense this year.
Right.
Certainly James Harden didn't, and you know, you guys are all aware about James Harden, and you know, Patrick Beverley didn't play great defense. You know, the whole roster up and down didn't play great defense. So I don't to put that on Dwight for how the Rockets were so bad on defense, I think it's largely unfair. So, to conclude, I think, you know, fans should remember Dwight Howard's tenure in Houston fondly. I don't think he should get booed, and I think it was fully worth it signing Dwight Howard when you did.
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially, you know, considering that he chose the Rockets over several other teams, you know, it makes the Rockets look even better, you know, in that regard.
Yeah. And, you know, he certainly had a lot of options. He had Golden State after his services. He had, you know, certainly LA was after his services to re-sign his services, and, you know, Houston and Dallas and, you know, countless other teams were after Dwight Howard, and the Rockets are fortunate enough to land him. And that bodes well for their history of free agency. And it helps them going into this free agency. That's something Houston can pitch their success in the offseason to other free agents that might be willing to come in. So let's go ahead and talk about the draft. But before the draft, let's talk about Alessandro Gentile, a prospect in Europe that the Rockets have had for a couple of years now. And it looks like this is the year he might come over. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so actually in October of 2015, it was reported, you know, by the Rockets that that they wanted to bring him over in 2016. And then pretty much right before Dwight opted out, we got the notification that that he basically said he wants to come over this year. He said he thinks that James Harden is a superstar, and you know, that he wants to come to the team this year, which, you know, that again shows that the Rockets are desirable and people do want to play with Harden. Harden isn't, you know, the cancer that people seem to make him out to be. And, you know, Gentile is he's a creator. He's a very, you know, slash and drive kind of guy. And he can also shoot the long ball a little bit. So he would definitely be welcomed.
Yeah, and his passing skills are pretty underrated in my opinion. He's really good with the basketball in his hands, and that's something the Rockets really need. Somebody who can do things with the basketball in his hands, and I think he can make a very capable role player. He's added like 20 pounds since the Rockets actually drafted him, which is pretty encouraging. Because when he was drafted, the criticism of him was he's too skinny, his frame will never work in the NBA, and he added literally 20 pounds onto his frame. So that's pretty encouraging. It's exciting that the Rockets have a prospect like that locked up and willing to come over, which is something they can't say about Sergio Yo. So Sergio Yo came out a couple days ago and said something along the lines of, I'm going to paraphrase for a minute. He said, you know, I signed a contract when I came here for 6 years. My expectation is I'm going to stay here all 6 years, and I don't expect to leave anytime soon. So it looks like Sergio is not coming over, which is really, really disappointing because he was an exciting prospect. He was a quick point guard who can run pick and roll, shoot the three ball, very good handling the basketball, and he can make he could have made a very good pairing with James Harden had he come over. But that's unfortunate. Do you have any opinion of this?
Yeah, it is. It's very disappointing. You know, guy that's won multiple, you know, Finals MVPs or whatever the equivalent is, you know, in that league. And you know, he's highly regarded most of the time as the best guy, the best player on his team, and the team that's winning the championship. You know, that's a guy that you want on your team. And I can understand why, you know, he wouldn't want to leave. He's got loyalty to the franchise, and he, you know, he's winning. So, you know, there's not a lot of reason necessarily for him to leave, but it would have been really nice, you know, if we could have, you know, convince him to come over.
Yeah, and you can never force a guy to come over like that, but he gave a lot of indications.
Throw money at him.
Yeah, he gave indications to the team for a long time that he'd be willing to entertain the opportunity to come over, and he never actually entertained. He actually used the Rockets as leverage to get bigger deals in Europe.
Yeah.
And from that end, if I were a fan, and if I were Daryl Morey, I'd be extremely frustrated with Sergio Yo, and it's disappointing. It's disappointing because the Rockets drafted him, and the Rockets spent a lot of time salivating at the thought of bringing him over, and they came close last year, and it never came to fruition, and that's disappointing. But hey, at least you can hang your hat on Gentile perhaps coming over this year or coming over next year. He's a little bit more open to coming over. So there's that. And let's go ahead and talk about this draft. So the draft was fairly uneventful as far as the Rockets making a trade into the first round. Daryl Morey kind of teased on a couple of podcasts earlier this week, earlier last week, that it'd be fairly easy to come into the first round as a team to trade into the first round because so few teams have a lot of first round draft picks, if that makes sense. There was just, you know, Philadelphia, Boston, teams like that, you know, hoarded a lot of draft picks. So they were a lot more willing to trade their picks than actually draft these guys. So it looked like there was an opportunity to come into the first round. Unfortunately, that didn't actually happen. And the Rockets ended up actually keeping their picks and selecting into that round. And with those picks, they selected Chinecki Onuaku. I'm sorry, I'm very bad at pronouncing names. And Zochi. So, yeah, so Chinegi Onuaku is he's actually the guy who shoots free throws underhanded. So
yeah,
there's
his nickname is Nanu, so you can just call him Nanu.
Nanu. I like that. He's always the guy who shoots, in my head, he's the guy who shoots free throws underhanded because that was a big story coming out of college. So that's how I'm going to remember him. But he's a shot-blocking center. Can finish well around the rim, a very good defensive center, has really good defensive instincts. In fact, I saw a stat the other day. The team played a lot better when he was on the floor than when he was off the floor. So that's pretty encouraging, especially with Dwight Howard opting out of his contract. The team needs a lot of depth at the big man position now, considering Dwight Howard's not likely to come back. Do you have any opinions on Onuaku?
Yeah, you know, he's not... He's definitely not as big as Dwight, He's like 6'9", like 250. So, you know, he's, you know, an inch and a half shorter and about 20 pounds lighter. But he does bring some of the same I guess concepts that that Dwight does. You know, he's he has a 9 foot standing reach, a nine foot 1.5 inch standing reach. So that's encouraging. You know, he does have really good defensive instincts as far as, you know, help defense and getting blocks. And it's not like the Hassan Whiteside blocks that you know, are just stat padding, as people like to say. He's athletic. He doesn't finish, or I'm sorry, he does finish around the rim really well. He will not give you much on his own offensively, but he can definitely, you know, you can pass on the ball within 3 feet of the goal and he'll finish. He'll find a way to finish. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, and the other player they drafted was Zhou Qi, who's a center out of China with good length and mobility. He has a pretty good feel for the game, and from all indications, he's a pretty smart player. And he can shoot the jump shot. He's a pretty good ball handler. He's very young. He's 20 years old. Yeah, he's an exciting prospect that they drafted. And by all indications, he's not coming over next year. It seems like the Rockets were looking to draft and stash guys so they wouldn't take the cap hit this summer. And that makes total sense considering the free agency they need to have to come back on top this year. And he can, from all indications, he can switch on to guards. In the pick and roll, he has a good touch around the rim. He can extend out to the 3-point line, and he should be able to run the floor. And he has great offensive skills. As far as the defensive instinct, you know, he has the size and he has the body for it to play good defense. It looks like he's mobile enough to play pick and roll defense. As far as rim protecting, that's still up in the air. What's your opinion on Zhou Qi?
Yeah, I mean, he's big. He's definitely big. And big guys that can shoot, you know, shoot the jumper are great. He's a little skinny. He's only about 210 pounds, 220 pounds maybe, which is, you know, that's pretty thin for being 7'2". He does have a really nice standing reach, which is 9 foot 4.5 inches. So that's, you know, that's a really... that can project well for his shot blocking ability. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, he's got a 31.5 inch vertical, wow, which is pretty good for a 7'2" guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like you said, he's a stash. He may play in the D League a little bit, but more than likely he's going to finish out his contract, in China. And, you know, I think that this draft, the reason that Morey said that he, you know, could trade into the first round, I think the only way he was going to is if he could get a top 10 pick, you know, and get somebody that can play or contribute now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't really make sense for the Rockets to trade their 2 second rounders for a late first rounder or give up a potential, you know, player for basically somebody that's just going to hit your cap and cost you in the long run. So the draft made sense to me. I didn't expect, you know, a lot.
Yeah. And, that's the same for me. You know, it looked like the Rockets were trading in the first round. And as you said, I didn't think they would trade as high as a top 10 pick, but hey, they got two promising prospects out of it, and one that's probably going to come over this year, one that is going to come over this year because he's an American player, and one that's, you can, you know, he's not going to take a salary cap hit, and he looks like he's going to get a lot better, and he's promising. Zhou Qi, good passer, high ceiling. He's a good guy to keep the rights for. So let's go ahead and talk about free agency, because July 1st is just around the corner. It's June 28th as we're recording this, and I'm so excited for free agency, because it's going to be insane. The contracts we're going to see as soon as July 1st hits, they're going to be massive. The average salary for a starter is going to be around 15 plus million per year. And it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting. And the Rockets certainly have a lot of work to do as far as getting back to being a win now team and surrounding talent around James Harden. And it's exciting. And we have a lot to talk about as far as a report came out yesterday from Calvin Watkins and ESPN that the Rockets were interested in the likes of Al Horford, Jeremy Lin, Kevin Durant, although they didn't get a meeting with Kevin Durant, and
I think Conley was one.
And Mike Conley, and it looks like they're gonna cast a wide net as far as the high level free agents are concerned, and also Ryan Anderson, and it looks like they're gonna be very aggressive as they should, and whether or not that's going to land them a star player or a max contract player this offseason, that's still yet to be determined. But at least you can take solace in the fact that they're going to be aggressive.
Yeah. So my thinking for the Rockets is that they're going to get, even if they're not able to get a high-level free agent this year, I think that it would benefit them to get some mid-level guys. Because you are going to have the cap go up next year, and contracts can be moved and stuff like that, to where you can end up with another max slot, fairly easily. So then, if you end up having those role players in place already with James Harden, and then you have a successful season where you make it to the second round of the playoffs or something like that, and you show promise, you're going to be much more enticing to somebody that's a free agent next year, and increase your chances of nabbing the big fish next year.
Yeah, and that's largely my thinking on the free agency. I think I really don't think they're going to land a star free agent this year. I don't think it's worth giving out a max contract just for the sake of giving out a max contract. I think they should target the mid-level guys. They should be very aggressive after the Jeremy Lins, the Nick Batums, the Allen Crabs of the world, and become attractive for free agents next year, for star players next year. I don't think they're going to land a star free agent this year. Last season just rubbed off on the league the wrong way. I don't think they're attractive, particularly to the likes of Kevin Durant. I mean, they didn't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant, which is unfortunate. And I don't think they're going to land Al Horford, even though he'd fit very well in D'Antoni's system. I think they should go after mid-level guys, because those guys can help your team win, and they can help your team get better in the short term very, very quickly, especially if you get a lot of mid-level guys. And the Rockets have enough cap room to where they can entice. They have up to $46 million in cap room right now. The cap is projected to go up to $94 million, and I expect that to even go even higher, like $1 or $2 more after the moratorium period. I would not be surprised at all if it went up. And they have a lot of money to play with. And I think if they sign guys and they preserve a max slot for next year, they can be just enticing enough to where they're very good. They make it into the playoffs. They perhaps get past the first round, and you can pursue a guy like Kevin Durant again next offseason, assuming Kevin Durant signs a 1+1 deal.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned a lot of those guys, those mid-level guys, and where I think that works is what the Rockets were missing last year were people to fill in the gaps. They weren't missing the star power. They had James Harden playing out of his mind. They weren't missing that.
Yeah.
They were missing the stuff in between. They were missing the guys that can grab, those hustle rebounds, or those guys that can, light up 10 or 12 points in a row easily. Those guys that can come in and run the offense for you. That's exactly what they missed last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, they handed the ball to James Harden and were like, hey, create or score. Yeah. And while you're at it, rebound and block and do whatever you can, else. So where I think that they're going to benefit from is having those guys come in, and do some of the dirty work and do some of the filling in the gaps. And I think that's going to make them look a lot better. They're going to gain some of that respect back around the league. Put some respect on the Rockets' name, and help them entice somebody. And it's funny that you mention Jeremy Lin and Nick Batum, and I've heard Marvin Williams get floated. All these guys are from the Hornets.
Yeah.
And looking at the Hornets free agents, they have a boatload of free agents that they're going to have to pay. And I don't feel like there's any way that they're going to be able to pay all of them. You know, Jeremy Lin's probably going to make $12 million a year. Marvin Williams probably going to make $12 million a year. Al Jefferson is declining, but, you know, he made $13 million last year. He'll probably make around the same thing this year, or, you know, on a new contract, you know, just because he's declining. Nick Batum is, you know, he's potentially a max level player. They just can't afford all these guys. So Courtney Lee is another guy that we've talked about prior to this. You know, they're just not going to be able to afford all these guys. And so that's going to leave some of them open for the picking.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you. I think, you know, fans can be fooled into thinking that Corey Brewer and Terrence Jones and a lot of the guys they have on the roster are actually good at basketball, but they're not. They have a lot of work to do as far as the bench is concerned. I don't think they have a particularly good bench right now, and I think a lot of these guys are expendable. I think a lot of these guys are worth moving on from, and I think, as you said, I think that the likes of Marvin Williams, the likes of Jeremy Lin, the likes of, you know, whoever, a mid-level guy, is much more enticing right now in the short term to sign this free agency. The term I coined for this is the setup offseason. I think this is pretty much the setup offseason for next year, to where, you know, yeah, you're probably not winning a championship next year, but you're much better off in terms of on the pathway to having a suitable plan, you know, going after high-level free agents.
Here's a little bit of breaking news for you. Mark Stein just tweeted that one well-placed source insists that San Antonio's free agent interest in Mike Conley is overstated.
Oh.
So that's a good development for the Rockets.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I still expect him to go back to Memphis, but that eliminates a possibility.
Yeah. As far as Mike Conley's concerned, I'm not as high on Mike Conley coming to the Rockets as most other fans are.
No, that's not a great fit.
Yeah, that's my thinking, and I don't think it's worth spending the cap room on him considering his age and where he's going to be at towards the end of his contract. He's going to be earning like $33 million in his fifth year, and I just think that's going to be a bad contract that the Rockets are going to be stuck with. And I don't think he's going to be as good in that fifth year. So that's I'm very hesitant on Mike Conley and his fit. I don't think he'd fit well in a Mike D'Antoni offense. It's unfortunate that Mark Stein report came out, because I think he'd actually make a good fit on the Spurs.
He absolutely would.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate for the Spurs. But hey, they're in a good space. They're contending, and they're probably gonna be in the race for the Western Conference Finals next year. So they're in a much better place than the Rockets are. So I'm certainly not feeling bad for them. So let's go ahead and get into questions. Do you think we're gonna extend a qualifying offer to Terrence Jones? Also, any thoughts on Marvin Williams on a short term deal? Okay, so let's get into the first part of this question. This is from Aaron Chen on Twitter. As far as a qualifying offer on Terrence Jones, I don't think so. And part of this is my opinion on Terrence Jones leaking into what I think the Rockets are going to do. I just don't think Terrence Jones is very good right now, and I don't think he projects well next season. I think he's very, very injury prone. I think at his peak, he's a very good rebounder. He has great hands. He's athletic. He can finish very well around the basket. But he hasn't hit that peak in a while, in about 2 years, in fact. And I don't think it's worth extending a qualifying offer or expending any amount of cap space on Terrence Jones. And I don't think the Rockets are going to do that. I think the Rockets are looking for a fresh start this offseason, and that would probably start with guys like Terrence Jones.
Yeah, while I don't think that they should extend a qualifying offer to him, I think they will. Because somebody else is going to offer him more. I think his qualifying offer is like $3.5 million or something. And if they can get Terrence Jones at $3.5 million, you know, that as a fourth big, you know, he's not the worst in the league. Mm-hmm. So I think they could extend one to him, but I think somebody will offer him a little bit more than that. He's not going to play for a good team. I can tell you that much. He'll probably go get, you know, a decent amount of minutes in like New Orleans or something. And I don't think New Orleans is going to be that good this year.
Yeah. And that's pretty much my thoughts on it. I don't even think it's a wise, to extend $3.4 million to Terrence Jones, because, you know, while he's not one of the worst players in the NBA, he could have fooled me. I mean, last year he was so bad. That's just my take on it. I don't think they'll extend a qualifying offer. Taylor does. Also, do you think Marvin Williams on a short-term deal is a good idea? I do. I'm really high on Marvin Williams.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he can defend. He can shoot the three ball. He can play in a high-paced offense, and he's really, really good. And I think he's probably going to be one of the guys that doesn't demand upwards of $20 million. I think he's going to demand somewhere around $10 to $12 million, and that's a very good value contract for what the Rockets are looking for.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. You could get scared of that contract year type of thing. Maybe he was just playing out of his mind in a contract year, but, you know, he's kind of put up for the past 3 years now, good 3-point percentage. He's been, an above average defender. He plays a lot of games. I mean, he doesn't miss very many games. He's a solid player. And if you can get a solid player, which is what the Rockets need, then you're in good shape.
Yeah, and especially on the short-term deal, which is what Aaron Chen is suggesting, because, you know, he is pretty old in NBA terms. He's around 30 years old, and I think if you extend a two or three year deal to, you know, Marvin Williams for around, let's just say, $36 million, I think that's well worth it. If you can get him to agree on it, and I don't think he's looking for a long-term deal, because the cap's going to go up again next year. And I think free agents are very smart as to the length of contracts they're looking at right now. Also, should the Rockets sign Jeremy Lin and Chandler Parsons? This is coming from Wakar H on Twitter. Yeah, they should definitely go after Jeremy Lin. Now, as far as Chandler Parsons is concerned, I'm not sure what kind of contract he's actually going to get. He's demanding a max contract, and if it comes to fruition that he's actually, you know, looking at a max contract, like that's a realistic option for him, I don't think it's worth signing Terrence Chandler Parsons. He just opted out of a $15 million a year deal. If you can get him for around $19 million a year, which is a pretty fair bump towards his last contract, and I think it's pretty sizable for like a 3 or 4 year deal, I think it's worth it. But to me, a max contract for Chandler Parsons, he's too injury prone, and he's just not as good. He's just not that good to demand that kind of money. Yeah, and Jeremy Lin, he's a solid fit in Mike D'Antoni's offense. He did awesome in New York during Lin's sanity. He can play at a fast pace, and I think this is an unpopular opinion. I think he had a good tenure in Houston. That's just me. I think playing beyond Patrick Beverley and playing with James Harden, I think he's pretty much the perfect kind of backup point guard you want for this Rockets team.
Yeah, it was his contract that made him, you know, less desirable. He made too much money at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as Chandler Parsons goes, his max is $22 million. For a guy that's had, you know, consecutive knee surgeries, he shot a career high from 3-point percentage. But, man, for a guy that relies on cutting and getting to the basket and doing things like that, you know, it's worrisome. I would like to have him back here. And I think that he would fit really well into the system, but I'm terrified of paying a guy and then him just going down and not being effective again.
Yeah. It's a scary thought, especially with the kind of contracts he's looking at. And, I agree. I think if you can get Jeremy Lin back for a reasonable deal, and also Chandler Parsons back for a reasonable deal, and a reasonable deal for Chandler Parsons, to me, is around $19 million tops. I just don't think he should demand more than that. I think that's a good deal if you can get him back for that amount of money. Also, we got an email question from Dominique. What do you think the chances are of signing Gentile and Sergio Yo coming over? So this is just the first part of the question. I think Sergio Yo is pretty much an afterthought at this point. I think it's a pipe dream. I don't think he's coming over anytime soon. It might actually be kind of a Pablo Prigioni type thing, where he comes over in his late 30s to the NBA and never actually comes over in his prime. I don't think he's coming over, and I think he's pretty much settled where he is in Spain. And as far as Gentile is concerned, I think it's much more likely he comes over than Sergio Llull. What we're hearing now is that he actually wants to come over, and so that's encouraging. And the second, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that obviously Sergio Llull he's a pipe dream at this point. You know, there's not really much else to say. He's kind of already told us that he's not coming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Gentile, I think that, you know, signing him to a 3-year, $24 million contract, you know, maybe with a team option after the second year, I think that would be perfect. You know, that it's a low risk, high reward type of contract. And, you know, it's certainly more than he's making right now.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I think Gentile is good, and I think it's worth bringing him over. I think he can make a good NBA rotation player. Yes. Also, with KD not meeting with the Rockets, is a successful offseason achieved by getting two max guys like Horford and Anderson while adding guys like Jeremy Lin and Allen Crabbe? Yeah, but I disagree with giving Ryan Anderson a max contract. Yeah, a successful offseason is definitely achieved if you get Al Horford in any way, even if you don't get good role players. I would qualify that as a good offseason. Yeah, if you can get Al Horford and get guys like Jeremy Lin and Allen Crabbe, that's certainly a good offseason. That's pretty much what we've been rallying for at Red Nation Hoops. Pretty much everybody on staff really wants to bring Al Horford to the team and sign guys like, you know, Jeremy Lin, Allen Crabbe. You know, we have a pretty big fan base as far as the Red Nation Hoops is concerned for Allen Crabbe. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if you can get, Horford, it's an automatic win for an offseason. I think if you can get Ryan Anderson on a less than the max deal, plus Jeremy Lin or Allen Crabbe or any combination of role players with Ryan Anderson, I think that's a win.
What would you qualify as a reasonable deal for Ryan Anderson? Because I'm stumped on that.
I go so back and forth. So I think that paying Ryan Anderson $18 million,
yeah,
like is that. Fair. Mm-hmm. You know, he has had injury problems, and you know he's kind of a one-sided player. He doesn't give you much on the defensive end, but he's electric on the offensive end. You know, he can do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess paying him about $18 million and then adding in some other guys around him, I think I would consider that a win.
Yeah, and the fit in Mike D'Antoni's system is amazing with Ryan Anderson.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a really good pick-and-pop guy. He can shoot the three ball. He can stretch the floor for James Harden. And he can do a lot of things in Mike D'Antoni's system. He can run the floor pretty well. He can give you some low-post buckets every once in a while, but although I wouldn't give that to him because I think Mike D'Antoni would like to run the ball a little bit more, he's a really good player. He's a really good player. I just don't think the Rockets can get him for under a max contract because it really seems like him and his agent are really steadfast on getting that max deal. And if it turns out that he can get – that he's attainable for less than a max, I think it's certainly worth it. I think the fit's awesome.
I feel like he's probably more likely to go to Washington than anything. I think they'll offer a max if they're capable of doing so. I haven't checked out the numbers, but, you know, they have shown a lot of interest lately. So,
yeah, I have a gut feeling that he ends up in Sacramento for, like, a really bad deal. That's just me. That's the feel I get right now, and I hope that doesn't happen because I really want Sacramento to succeed, especially with Dave Yeager down there. I really want them to succeed. I want Boogie Cousins to have a good team. I want to see the look of that. I want to see a good Sacramento basketball team coming into next year. So there's this topic I've been avoiding during the course of this podcast: Hassan Whiteside. So, the report from Calvin Watkins also included Hassan Whiteside as far as the Rockets being interested in him. And I'm just not a fan of Hassan Whiteside. I just don't think he's worth the max contract. I don't think he has particularly high character. I'm not a fan of his defense. I think he's an okay rim protector, but I think the blocking stats are overrated. I'm not a big fan of using blocks and steals as a measure of defense. I just don't think that's particularly accurate. I think, you know, the numbers show that when he's in the game, the Miami Heat aren't that much better on defense than when he's sitting on the bench, and that's just raw numbers, and a lot of people around Miami can actually tell you that he's not particularly disciplined. He goes after a lot of blocks. You can get him with a pump fake. He's not a very good pick and roll defender. I watch a lot of his games on League Pass. He's not very gifted on the pick and roll, and I'm just not a fan of giving him a max contract. I think there's much better options out in the free agency market, and I think Clint Capella is just so much better. I'm really high on Clint Capella. And maybe I'm too high on Clint Capella, but I just think he's the future center of this team if you're not getting Al Horford. Because I think Clint Capella has already showed a good tendency to switch on to guards in pick and roll. He's really good. He's really good defending the pick and roll in general, switching and whatnot. And last year he took a significant step up in terms of protecting the basket. So I'm really high on Clint Capella. I think if you're not getting Al Horford, I think you should stick with Clint Capella. I'm not big on Hassan Whiteside. Do you disagree with me, or do you?
So here's the thing: I agree with everything that you're saying, and I still think that if the opportunity is there, that the Rockets have to go after him.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that the reason is, I think he would bring a swagger back to the Rockets that they've been missing. I think he and James Harden would get along really well. I think James Harden would enjoy a big man that, you know, he can give the ball to, or, you know, can obviously catch lobs, you know, and finish with ferocity, and can run better than Dwight could run. Definitely gives you more blocked shots. Now, whether or not those are empty blocks or what you want to call it, I think that one reason that Les might go after Whiteside is the fun factor.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's definitely something that Les is always worried about. Yeah. And I agree with everything that you said, but I still think that the Rockets should offer him a contract, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah, I get what you're coming from. He's a name, and I think he would sell tickets, and I think the Rockets would be fun, I guess, with him.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the long term outlook for this team, I just don't think he'd be good. And as far as
and maybe he's the guy that you could, if it doesn't work out, or if the team chooses to go in a different direction or whatever, he's a guy that you could probably trade because he's going to put up some numbers.
For the max deal, you think that's a tradable contract?
Yeah, I think. I mean, if the Bulls can trade Derrick Rose's contract, you know.
Yeah, anything's possible, certainly. It's just from a pure character standpoint, and I don't really get into the nitty-gritty of character and locker room leadership and whatnot. I just don't think he's somebody you want to have around this locker room, especially after, you know, the toxicity that happened last year.
Yeah, it could totally blow up. It could blow up completely in our faces. And yeah.
So we're on the same page. You're not a fan of Hassan Whiteside, but you think he'd be a good signing.
Yeah, I think that maybe not a good signing, but he's a signing that I could see happening.
Okay, all right, makes sense. I could certainly see it happening too. But yeah, that's it for the Rockets portion of this podcast. I want to talk about the finals because Game 7 lived up to my expectations and exceeded it. I loved every bit of that Game 7, everything from the start of the game to the end of the game, the last five heart-wrenching minutes of that game where nobody scored, and it seemed like whoever was going to score last was going to be the person to win the game. I mean, whoever was going to score next was going to be the person to win the game. It seemed like that towards the end of the game. That's actually what ended up happening with that incredible Kyrie Irving step-back jumper over Steph. That was just such a fun game, man.
That was I have not been on the edge of my seat more for a game since, like, the Suns-Spurs series, you know, back in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't just the game itself. It was, you knew what was at stake. And there was so much at stake at that game. Everything from the Warriors being a 73 win, wanting to validate their season to being the greatest team of all time, to the Cavs and LeBron wanting to go through with his promise of bringing a championship back to Cleveland and getting that elusive third title. There was just so much on the line. And from a legacy standpoint, there was just so much to look at, especially if you're a historian like me. Like, you know, I'm constantly rating players in my head as far as the all-time list. And to me, after that finals, there's no way, in my opinion, there's no way you can have LeBron any lower than three on your all-time list.
Completely agree.
Yeah, that was just so fun. I mean, the only person, in my opinion, that you can put ahead of LeBron that's not Michael Jordan is probably Kareem, because of the longevity that he had towards the end of his career. And the amount of accolades that he attained throughout the rest of his career, and the numbers he put up were just insane. And you know, they actually had to ban the dunk in college because of him, which is pretty insane. And that shows to what kind of player Kareem was. And that's those Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are the only two people I can with a sound mind put ahead of LeBron in the all-time race. I put him ahead of Kobe. I put him ahead of Magic. I put him ahead of Larry. And I know a lot of the all-timers are exiting this podcast right now. I just think LeBron's just so good. And to me, that finals, beating a historic Warriors team with what was on the line and the stakes, and just it was just it validated his career to me. You can't say anything about LeBron anymore.
Yeah, completely. I can't tolerate any LeBron slander. I got in an argument with somebody on Facebook because they said that LeBron wasn't great because he doesn't have a jumper, and the only reason that he's as good as he is because he's an athletic beast that the world hasn't ever seen anyone like him. And I'm thinking, okay, how does that take away from his greatness whatsoever? That game, you know, I could not stop watching. And, you know, watching Kevin Love's defense on Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
For a guy that can't defend, he really stuck to his guns there. And that sequence alone, you know, Steph Curry not being able to create, and then followed by the LeBron block on Andre Iguodala, and man, if LeBron had finished that dunk,
I was just talking about that on Twitter today.
If he had finished that,
I don't think that would have been
like top two or three dunks of all time,
for sure.
I mean, you know, when you factor in you know, time of game and importance and crowd factor and
who he was dunking on, Draymond Green, like
yeah. And, you know, Kyrie today, you know, he was quoted basically saying that there's three Warriors on Team USA, and he's going to have to rub it in their face a little bit, you know, while he's out there. As awful as the first six games of that series were, you know, being so one-sided and you know, obviously – you know, you could tell kind of the outcome way before the end of the game. Game seven was an all-timer.
Yeah, to me, for sure. Like, it was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen in my life. And that's after watching those incredible Miami and San Antonio games like a couple years ago. Like, this was definitely an all-timer in terms of magnitude, in terms of quality of the game. Even though the last 5 minutes were a little bit ugly, it was certainly just so entertaining, because you could never look away. The margin only went up to nine when the Warriors went on a little bit of a run, and Draymond had just a monster game.
Yeah, he was so bad for him. You know, in the first half on threes.
Yeah,
I think it was the highest rated finals game ever.
Yeah, I don't blame the fans for tuning in. I certainly wouldn't have missed it. I was actually, I was on the boat, I was on the cruise, and I was worried that the cruise wouldn't have the channels to watch the game. I was stressing out, and I found out like pretty much a few hours after I got on the boat that they didn't have ABC. So I was stressing, and I was looking for a stream online, and then I figured out the boat was streaming the NBA Finals by the poolside. So I was fortunate enough to watch it with pretty much 100 other people standing by the poolside, and the reactions to that game were just, everybody was on the edge of their seat. Nobody left the poolside deck. Nobody wanted to give up their seat. It was just a fun game, and I watched it again today, and man, like, that was just such a good game. And Kyrie, man, like, he's only 24 years old, and it's starting to look more and more like he's going to end up becoming a top 5 point guard in the NBA.
And I'll say this upcoming season for him is probably probably the most important of his career.
Yeah.
He's either going to take that next step, or he's going to, you know, kind of fall in the shadow of what he could have been.
Yeah.
I mean, he's only 24, so he's got time, but I really think this is a pivotal season for him, and I think that he kind of has that experience now. Mm-hmm.
He's been in the big moments.
Yeah. And so I think he's got, you know, he had multiple 40-point games and then that three and, playing good defense and outplaying Steph Curry, and he did it all, you know, and now it's time for him to just bring that for the whole season, and he's, you know, in my opinion, he'll be certainly a top 5, if not higher, point guard.
Yeah, and he's 1-for-1 in the playoffs. He's had one healthy playoff and he won a championship. So it looks like the Cavs are looking forward to about 5 more championships before this all said and through. I'm kidding.
What happens with Kevin Love?
That's tough. I was just about to bring this up. I think Kevin Love stays. I think they should keep him.
I think he has to. I mean, yeah. I don't think you can't trade a guy after, you know, you make it. You know, you win the finals with him.
Yeah, and he played so well in that game 7. Like he was all after it on the boards, and
he played well in the playoffs. You know, overall,
yeah,
he was averaging a double double until the finals, and then he, you know, had a bad finals series, and then in game 7 he showed up. You know,
yeah, he just, the only thing that I would say about Kevin Love in that game 7 was he missed a couple of rotations. And he missed a couple of open jumpers, but that's it. He played an awesome game overall. He's all over the boards. He played good defense, and overall through the playoffs, I thought he played adequate defense, especially by Kevin Love standards. And I think, yeah. I think it's hard to trade him after a series like that. And I think they're gonna need him going forward as LeBron continues to age, and he's gonna need more out of Kevin Love and Kyrie to carry the offense as he coasts through the regular season as he sort of continues to do so. And he's,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think having guys like that on the roster and that you know can bring their A game on the offensive end, I think that's somebody you keep around. That's somebody you keep around. And I know the popular opinion is you trade Kevin Love for some wing defenders and a bunch of good role players. Like maybe you trade him to Boston for Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley. But I just don't think you're gonna get the same amount of value for Kevin Love as you would from him being on the roster long term wise.
There's something to say for continuity. You know, having familiar guys come back. I mean, that's what the Spurs have built their entire, you know, past 20 years on.
Yeah.
You know, they keep guys around for as long as, you know, as long as they can. And when they bring guys in, it's guys that are of similar character, you know, of similar playing styles and people that'll buy into their philosophy. And that's how you build a winning organization.
Yeah, and I'm so intrigued at what happens to the Warriors this offseason. Because they have the Harrison Barnes contract coming up. There's questions as to whether or not the Warriors would be willing to pay him a max contract, which is what he looks to demand in the offseason. And he played an awful series. He missed a whole bunch of open jumpers. He didn't show up on the boards, and he just wasn't good in the finals. And that doesn't bode well for him in as far as his future in Golden State. I still think he's going to demand a max contract because somebody's going to give him a max contract because there's so much money out there. And it's going to be interesting because the Warriors, in my opinion, after Oklahoma City, they're the favorites to sign Kevin Durant. I think this losing in the finals kind of justifies to them breaking up the core a little bit or shaking it up to go after Kevin Durant.
Yeah, So I think that if they're not able to sign Kevin Durant, they have to bring back their guys. And the problem with that is that if they bring back Barnes and they bring back Azeli, then they can't bring back Livingston. Or if they bring back Livingston, they can't bring back Azeli. And this is something that Sam Esfandiari was talking about earlier on Twitter. And he thinks that they should bring back Azeli over Livingston.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because, a rim-protecting, high-percentage finisher, a big is hard to find.
And he can run the floor really well.
Yeah, and so that's it's going to be interesting. There's going to be some sort of fall off. They're going to lose something. But the guys that they drafted, I don't remember off the top of my head. The player that they got in the first round at number 30, but I remember he, from what I read about him, he's like. He fits their style perfectly. And so, if they can get something, close to Sean Livingston out of a player, then that's good for them. But I really feel like they're not going to take a step back. They're not going to be bad. They're not going to be, they're certainly not going to, not be the favorite, but they may struggle more than they would have. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah,
they're going to be great still.
Yeah, they're still going to win 60 plus games next season.
Yeah,
and they're still going to, regardless if they get Kevin Durant or not, they're still going to be competing for a championship. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon. To me, they're still the favorites going into next year to win the championship. Especially the way that they lost, losing from a 3-1 deficit. That's got to have them heated up. They're the type of team that prepares bulletin board material out of nothing, and they certainly have something to be fired up about after this finals. And it's gonna be interesting. I'm really intrigued at the future of these franchises. And it was an overall enjoyable finals, and I really enjoyed it. And I know fans want to talk about the Rockets offseason and whatnot, but this is what we build towards every year. We build towards the playoffs. This is what the Rockets are striving towards to become. And I think talking about this kind of helps understand what the Rockets should. Go after and should strive to become as far as a franchise.
Absolutely. Yeah. And while this particular finals may not be relevant to the Rockets, one day it will hopefully be. And at that point, we will probably spend several hours discussing what happened.
Multiple podcasts. Yeah. Yeah, and it's gonna be an exciting offseason. It's gonna be an intriguing couple of days for the next couple of days towards the NBA. I'm really excited for July 1st. I know you are. We're gonna be on Twitter. We're gonna be giving our live reactions to it. We're gonna have our hands full covering this offseason. It's gonna be fun.
Absolutely.
So in the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Red Nation Hoops, at Taylor L. Pate, and on iTunes at the Red Nation Hoops Podcast, and on SoundCloud at Red Nation Hoops Podcast. Give us a rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the podcast. If you didn't enjoy the podcast, give somebody else a negative rating, come back to our podcast, and give us a positive rating, because that's just the right thing to do. All right, guys. Good night.